Welcome. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Chef David Chernoff, who has a book called Manual for Living. I think he has this a triad book, and I actually have the book called Connection, but there's also book one called Reality and book three called Purpose. We're very pleased to have him with us. Seth is a two-time cancer survivor. He's a speaker and founder of multiple companies and has some advice for people who are looking for soul growth. Welcome, Seth.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Dr. Kolb. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. So I didn't get to read the book One Reality, but I'd like to start there since that's the first book of the series. You want to tell the audience a little bit about yourself and then a little bit about book one?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So the Manual for Living book series was a series that I wrote kind of while I was going through a couple rounds of cancer. And, you know, a lot of people ask me, well, gosh, was it a cancer that gave you the insights to write it? The cancer kind of gave me the impetus to write it, I guess I would say. And It's basically a culmination of kind of this life path that I've been on of trying to distinguish the specific things that stand between where we are as human beings and our path to happiness and fulfillment. And I've kind of laid out what I believe are very specific, but in many ways, you know, little areas of life that, you know, when combined, really make a very significant impact on our overall well-being and happiness.
Yeah, one of the themes of your book is that we're really pretty much the same inside, although externally and, you know, in terms of our life path, it may appear to be different, but the things beneath the surface are all the same.
Absolutely. I mean, the core tenets of a life for practical purposes on this planet or life as being human are very much the same as we go out in the world and we find, you know, love, we find ways to be of service, we find ways to you know, take care of ourselves and the people that we care about. You know, if you look around, we're all kind of in it together. We just handle it and process it and deal with it in very different ways and distinguished ways, which creates the color of life. I mean, that's one of the best parts of life is how we kind of go about this path from birth to death in our own way, yet we all end up in the same place and we all start in the same place.
That's right. So you want to talk a little bit about the first book?
Sure, be happy to. So Manual for Living Reality came out last summer. And reality is all about, basically, to simplify it, it's all about how to be human and find happiness. So it's about finding a new relationship to money and to time and to finding balance and peace and a harmony in a life where, you know, we tend to be very overtaxed and how to really find our sense of happiness and how to kind of step out of kind of the pettiness of living through the past or reflections of betrayal or pain from history, that type of thing. So it's really all the little things. There's, I think, 75 chapters in the first book, every one, again, which kind of has a relationship to our overall well-being and happiness from that perspective.
And the book that I read is called Connection. And you want to talk a little bit about what that is on an overview?
Of course, yeah, so Connection just came out, I think maybe 6 weeks ago, and Connection, second book in the series, it really takes it one step further, and it's all about how we create lasting, powerful relationships, not only with the most important people in our lives, but with coworkers, friends, our family members, and then also being respectful of the most important relationship in our life, which is the relationship to ourselves, to our truth, and how to live that in our life as we go into the world and deal with sometimes things that, you know, aren't so pleasant.
Okay, and then book three, which is called Purpose, I assume you're still writing that.
You know, I've written it, actually.
Oh, you've written it. Okay.
But I haven't had time to edit it because I've got a lot of feedback from the first book, and a lot of people have asked to have me write a workbook that goes along with each of the books. So the workbook for the first book is almost done, and it's called, you know, Workbook and Meditations, 15 Minutes to Happier Life or something like that. And it's So I've kind of put the third book on hold for just a little bit. But that book, Purpose, will probably come out, you know, maybe next year, probably the year after.
Okay. Well, I guess, do you want to start with a more in-depth discussion with the first book, I'll have to have you kind of lead that since I haven't read the book.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to.
I guess I want to start in the middle.
Well, you know what? They're not, they kind of stand alone. So you don't have to read the first book in order to read the second book.
Right.
They're just designed so that if you want a deeper understanding and a focus on those relationship, connection, intimate areas, the book actually takes us there. But, you know, the first book covers a lot of ground. Mm-hmm. I'll kind of just give you a brief overview.
Okay.
You know, I talked about your relationship with time. It has a lot to do with learning from illness. You know, illness mm-hmm. is a great teacher for us and how we grow and learn from that. You know, understanding fear and how fear is a very natural part of this life and how to face it and how to overcome it. I talk about our environment, not just our earth, but the environment we put ourselves in our life with the people we surround ourselves with, the homes that we live in, and the structures that we create that are either designed to help us fulfill our dreams or that are there to stand in the way of where we want to go in our life. I talk about kind of our physical limitations, how we exist as physical beings, death. I mean, I talk about death because nobody wants to talk about death. It mm-hmm. seems like, you know, we all know we're going to die, but nobody wants to face it. But death is actually a beautiful thing. It's a natural part of this life. It's the same for everybody. It's all different how it comes, but it's going to happen inevitably. But it's a very powerful guiding light for many of us, especially those like myself who have faced traumatic illness. You know, facing death has been an amazing and powerful transformative experience for me, and I think it's something that can be helpful to anybody. I talk about money a lot. You know, relationship to money is pretty upside down, and you can see that now and a lot of what's been happening over the last couple of years with Wall Street and, you know, Main Street, people losing their homes and the loss of stock value and a lot of things that people are going through right now. There's a relationship we have to money that's standing in the way of our happiness and fulfillment. Let's see, I talk about accumulation, how we kind of obsess ourselves with the things in our lives and not the things that really matter. Talk about how to really change and evolve and keep life simple. Talk about finding balance, how to really find balance in life. It doesn't mean that you don't take on big challenges or big dreams, but just finding the way to find balance. And then I go into happiness and really living in the present moment and finding peace and really discovering your greatness and finding a way to live that in the moment.
One of the things I've found that a principle that's so important, and you may actually deal with this more in purpose than in the first two books, is guidance. And we all have internal guidance systems that are very specific for, you know, what we came in to accomplish. And if you can really master those guidance systems, you can stay out of trouble and get there a lot quicker and not have as much, you know, things in the way of what you came in to do.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And I think that topic is actually a guiding theme throughout all three books because you have to learn to listen to your truth. And whether you believe that your guidance comes from God or from your inner being or your subconscious or wherever you believe it comes from, I believe that we're all guided, like you said. And we all have a very unique path and purpose in life, but it's up to us to listen to that and to follow that. For me, you know, I had this work in me before I got cancer the first time, but I just didn't want to do it. I was just too busy being an entrepreneur and running companies and out in the world and doing what I thought was kind of the greatness of my life, and I just kept putting it off. But I could hear it inside of myself. It was like my intuition was screaming at me. It just said, okay, it's time now. And I put it off for so long, and eventually I got sick. And when I got sick, I kind of got out of the surgery, and I looked around, and I said, oh, I guess it's time for me to get on my path. And that was it. So I got to work. But, you know, if you listen, you know, you maybe you can hear it without the pain that I had to go through.
I think that's true. I think, and sometimes it's just small little things. Like, I kept hearing that I needed to do this particular exercise. And I know why now. It has to do with getting my lymphatic system working better, which, you know, in cancer, it's very important. In other, you know, in preventing cancer, it's very important. And in preventing disease and treating infection. So just little things like you should do this little exercise. And I'd never been told to do a little exercise before. And I'm like 57, so, you know. But each time you get some specific information, it's better to just go ahead and do it, because you really don't know all the time what the benefits of that are going to be.
Mm.
It could be very, very large benefits.
Very nicely put.
It's very, I guess it's, we think that divine revelation needs to be big and important and everything, but no, it actually isn't. It's like, eat this, don't eat this, you know, go there, don't go there, do this exercise or don't do that exercise. And, it's the little things, really, that guide you.
It absolutely is. Yeah, you're right. We think that there's this, parting of the Red Seas experience,
right,
that we're going to have. It's going to say, hey, this is exactly where you need to go. But it's paying attention to all the little moments where we have little insights and making the right decisions in those
mm-hmm.
moments. But we have a tendency as a species to be very complacent. We get stuck in our patterns. And even though we know we should eat right, we know smoking is bad for us, we know we should exercise mm-hmm. from a physical perspective, yet many times a lot of us don't do it. And it's not that we don't know what we should do. It's that we're either unwilling or unable to make the change that we know will make us more fulfilled, make us happier, make us healthier, whatever it is that we desire. We know those will get us there, but there's an inner climate that we have to deal with before we can deal with the outer one.
And I think a lot of it is just that people don't realize that there is a spiritual system in place to help us. And the little things that they're telling, that spirit's guiding you this way or that way, or your soul or your internal guidance or whatever you want to call it, it really doesn't matter. But if you don't realize the system exists, you're not likely to pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna brush it off. But what I tell people is, if you hear something three times and you weren't trying to think about it, it had like nothing to do with what you were thinking about, and yet the thought intruded, and then later on it intruded again, and then finally on the third time, and it's a still small voice, not a, not screaming or very loud or anything. That still small voice that you hear for the third time, that could be really important, to pay attention to that.
That's a good exercise. That's a very good exercise. I have a lot of people ask me, how do you discern the inner ego voice from your inner truth? And that's a great principle. I always add to that, and I always say, if you actually take the time to sit quietly and listen to yourself, whether it's taking a break from the office, sitting in your car for a few minutes, and you just sit with it just
mm-hmm.
for a few minutes, you will know. Now, that is distinguished from whether you'd be willing to act on it, but at least you'll know that you're constantly choosing to follow your truth, or you're choosing
mm-hmm.
to do something else. But we always know, I think, when we actually stop for just a moment and we kind of cut off all the distractions of this human existence and we pay attention, we always know if the information we're receiving is either frustration from our own mm-hmm. Internal mind, or if it's actually something that's being given to us, a piece of guidance from the universe. And if we actually listen to that, you're right, it's a very direct way of getting the answers that we desire. And it's kind of like when we, sometimes we'll have a situation in life and we'll say, gosh, I just don't know what to do. And we'll go and we'll ask everybody. And they'll all say the same thing, and they'll say, you should do this. And we know that's what we should do, but we keep asking because we want somebody to tell us the other answer, because that's the one that we really want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. The whole journey of life, I believe, is to take the next step, which I think people are going to do in mass in the next few years, and that's realize that you can actually, once you realize the system is in place, you can actually use spiritual practices, meditation, yoga, Tai Chi, Qigong, whatever you want to do, it doesn't really matter. You can go play golf every day if you want, because golf will center you too. I mean, there's plenty of exercises in life that center you so that you have this conversation with your guidance. And then that's what you do. You start having the conversation with your guidance. You start gathering information. You start getting a lot more specific information about what you need to do. And I think that is the graduation into the spiritual realm, where we actually have a relationship with spirit, not just, we're in the dark and occasionally we get these little hints, go over here, do that, go talk to that person, don't talk to that person. you know, that kind of little hint thing. But I think we're going to, in mass, pretty soon in the next few years, discover that we have a whole system out there that can really help us, that we can actually have connection and communication with.
Absolutely. And if you look at, you know, Manual for Living Connection, it's really, it's directly about that, because in order to have quality relationships in our life with the people we care about, we have to have an amazing relationship with ourselves, with our truth, with our inner spirit. That's the place that we're actually going to be making our decisions from. We have a tendency, I think, as a species, to make decisions from our mind. And if you look at it, every relationship where you're making decisions from your mind and not from your heart, not from your inner truth, that relationship is only going to go so far. It's only going to take you to a place that's not fulfilling from your truth. And so you have to build on that relationship to your inner being, to your inner soul, in order that you can connect with your purpose, your unique destiny in this life. And so you have to take it from the inside out in order to enhance every relationship in your life.
Then the other thing you can do when things happen that are surprises or you don't know why they happened, you can actually gather information and discover how that fits into a bigger whole. Like, you're getting cancer, I'm breaking my arm. You know, these things that seem very bad for what, you know, you were an entrepreneur, I'm a surgeon, you wouldn't want to get cancer, I wouldn't want to break my arm, right? But yeah, those are gifts. Those are really, really big gifts to get us back on our path, to help prevent things that we don't want to happen. You know, all of these things, you just gather information about it, and then you realize that everything really is perfect. And then that really helps you to do something else that you emphasize in the Manual for Living, which is quit judging other people, because you don't know anything about their path. You really have no right to judge what they're doing or not doing.
Yeah, and judgment, I think, is so much more about ourselves individually. You're right. I mean, we have no right to judge other people, but it's really, you know, when we judge, we're out of our truth. We're out of our heart. We're out of the places that we really desire to exist in. And so it's really, it's kind of like forgiveness. You know, you're not forgiving someone in your past because you want to give them that gift. You're forgiving them because you want to give yourself the gift. You want to finally allow yourself not to have to relive the pain of something that traumatized you years ago, and you're going to allow yourself to move forward. So it's a pretty big distinguishing about how we live from the inside out, and if we can allow ourselves to embrace, accept, and allow people to be who they are and not be in judgment, well, that changes our own internal weather, because being in a place of judgment, again, takes us away from our truth, away from our heart.
Yeah, there's a book that Michael Rice wrote called Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And it talks about the principles of the filters that we have. And the filters we have filter what's coming in and change it, or appear to change it. It really doesn't change what's out there, but it changes what we perceive. And so, you know, if you've got to get over being a victim, you might attract to your field again and again and again people victimizing you. He uses the example of the woman who marries the same man, you know, seven times, that beats her, you know, just attracts a different one, but still attracting that. And the idea is that life gives you what you need to get over the place you're stuck at. So, you know, instead of cursing life, look at the patterns and then do what you need to do to get over, you know, the whatever is attracting that into your life.
Yeah, and that's a really key point. It's funny how I think in life, you know, we are guided to the right answer. Yet again, it doesn't mean that you make the right decision. But we're given many opportunities to make the right decision. And the universe, I believe, is designed to support us and guide us on our unique path in this life. And yet, we're very, very stubborn, and we just many times choose not to hear it. So like you just said, you know, we'll be given messages in a lot of different ways. But I think the messages get bigger and bigger and more dramatic as we ignore them. And I'm the perfect case in study for that, because, you know, I knew what the right answer was with respect to my writing, but I just didn't want to do it. I was too busy, too happy, or I felt that way in doing my work on the outside. But when I got cancer the first time and then the second time, it was pretty clear to me that I was being guided to what I wanted to do, what my purpose was in this life. And it wasn't something that was against who I was. It was directly consistent with what I wanted to do. So it basically allowed me to step into the place of where I wanted to be. And it doesn't matter if it's losing your job or losing your house or breaking your leg or whatever. I just think that we learn from these experiences, and it allows us to make better choices so that in the end, we do live more meaningful, fulfilled, and service-oriented lives.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that the outside world is a very big distraction. And it's easy to get out of balance without, really paying attention to your internal guidance. And when you get far enough out of balance, I think getting illness or some other tragedy in your life can often be a way to bring you back, and also a way to balance things out. That if you failed to balance it in your life, it is the balancing in itself.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. There's just there's a way the universe works, and we can either operate in harmony with it, or we can try to go it alone. And going it alone always ends up in a way where we're living our life in a manner that can be much more painful, much more difficult, much more challenging. And we grow. Either way, we grow. And either way, our life can be amazing and spectacular. But I think there's a way that we go with the grain that allows us to get to where we want to be in a quicker and more fulfilling manner.
Right. So the book on purpose, what sort of hints do you give people other than through this internal guidance system? Lots of people complain they don't know why they're here. What sort of advice do you give them in that book?
Well, guys, and everybody asks me, they'll get the first book or the second, and they'll say, well, I want the third book, so when can I get that one? Because I just want the purpose part. And it's true. I mean, that's really the holy grail. I mean, it's really the reason we're here. And, every book that I write is about taking us back to our truth. So in my work, as you know, I never tell people how to live their lives. I just give them tools on how they can make better decisions in every area of their life so that they can feel, find a better space, have access to their truth in order that they can get to where they want to be individually. And so the third book is no different. Purpose is really designed to help us see the things and find the places where we're going to find meaning and have clarity around our purpose in life. But specific to your question, finding our truth and listening to our truth and discovering what that purpose is definitely an ongoing path, and there's no one quick fix. It's not like you can take a pill and all of a sudden everything's fixed, but I do give a number of tips. And so the first step that I always tell people is have a true understanding of where you are. So take a life inventory of where you are in your life at this particular moment. So that's looking at your relationships, your car, your house, your work, your financial situations, and just be honest with yourself about what everything looks like. What's the relationship with your spouse, and how does it look? What's the relationship with your parents or your kids, and what is the quality of those relationships? And from that place, you can actually determine where you want to be and how you want to take those relationships. And that's the basis for getting into the deeper place of understanding what your unique purpose is in life. And then I kind of go through, how to find that purpose through moving through gratitude and exercises around the things that actually connect you with your truth and that type of thing. So without kind of going too far down that rabbit hole, it really has to do with that inner relationship to ourself. And so you have to deepen that relationship, that connection to your truth, before you can really discover what it is your purpose in life. And that's why, connection comes first, because you have to focus on that relationship in order to get clarity around that purpose.
So one of the spiritual principles which you talk about, which I think is real important that people understand, is that you can't give away, you can't be something, you can't have in your life love if you don't love yourself. Whatever is within you is there, and it manifests in your outer world, but if it's missing, you'll find it missing in your outer world, but you can't create it in yourself just by having it only in your outer world.
Yeah, I do talk about that quite a bit. Our outer world is a direct reflection of our inner world. And if we're finding chaos or problems or drama or situations in our outside world, it's very easy for us and very natural for us to blame the outside world. We blame the the other mm-hmm. people, and when there's a disagreement, we blame our boss. When there's a problem at work, we blame everybody. Yet we're very slow to take responsibility and ownership of who we've chosen to be in those situations that have created them as they are. And yet that's the only place that we're going to find freedom. That's the only place that we're going to allow ourselves to choose something better by actually being in control of the choices that we're making. So we have to be willing to go inside in order to understand why certain situations are occurring, or, as we've talked about, reoccurring in our life. We have to go inside to discover what the answers are. We can't continue looking outside of ourselves for our own truth. It only happens within us.
The other thing you talked about in connection, which I thought was important, I discovered this having about 35 to 40 employees, which I'm sure you've had too, which is a family unto itself. When you communicate with people, you only can really control what you think you said. You can't really control about how other people take it. And if you have people around you who have certain filters on that always hear what they want to hear rather than what's said, then, you know, say you say something in a way without a particular intent, but these individuals always hear it as a criticism, no matter what it is. Mm-hmm. It might be an instruction, but they're hearing it as a criticism. And, you know, when you're running a company, the easiest way to do is not to hire these kind of people, or, you know, to try to teach them, which is what I did. I tried to teach them that, you know, although I can have my intent, if they're always going to interpret it a certain way, then they're always going to do that. What they need to do is quit interpreting it the way it wasn't meant. And so I try to teach people around me that when they misunderstand me, that it's not, you know, it's. And I give them examples over time where they did the same thing with other people or other situations, and then try to show them that perhaps they need to not be a victim. You know, that would be the best thing. But in general, it's important to understand in your relationships that you're only responsible for your communication to them with the correct intent and the correct tone and the correct energy. But if they're misinterpreting it, then that's not something you have control over.
Yeah, and from the deepest level, you know, in life, we only control two things. You know, we think we control all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. But there's only two things in our entire life that we have control over. And it's who we're choosing to be in any given moment and the actions that we're taking. Those are the only things that we control. There's nothing else in our entire life that we have control over. And you said it so nicely. It's that, you know, in our relationships, it's always, again, the internal weather. It's always who we're choosing to be and how mm-hmm. we're showing up in those relationships. And we have to let go of everything else. And it's never more prevalent in our closest relationships with our spouse or our children or our coworkers or, as you said, our employees. You know, we have no control over how things are heard for a million reasons. Right. But we do have direct control over how we're showing up. And so if we show up in a way with clear intention and a kind heart, and we mm-hmm. say what we want to be said, what we want to be said, and they totally misinterpret it, and they decide to react or respond in a way that's mm-hmm. directly inconsistent with what we're saying, it's really not our problem. There's nothing we can do about it. And I, like you, have spent many years trying to educate or train or, in many ways, change, whether it's people in my life or employees or even customers where you're trying to guide them. And the mm-hmm. truth is that you just can't do that. You have to let it go. You can only give them everything that you have from inside of yourself. And if they choose to continue harming themselves or doing things that may restrict their own ability to find their sense of happiness, well, I just believe that we're each going to figure it out on our own, in our own way, on our own time. But it doesn't mean that we don't try. You know, we bang our head against the wall until we start bleeding, and then we say, gosh, well, at least I tried. But in the end, I mean, we only control, you know, who we're being in our life, and it really has to do with just how we're showing up.
Yeah, and when we're in relationship with these people, I always kind of look at, you know, after a period of time when I've tried everything and they're still reacting as a victim and refusing to take responsibility. This is often when they're patients, too, because, you know, obviously I have a lot of patients who are very, very ill. I'm not the typical plastic surgeon. I take care of a lot of women who are deathly ill from their breast implants, chemicals and biotoxins and other problems that aren't supposed to exist according to medical science, but really do. And basically, what I try to do is give them the path to regaining their health. But you know, for those individuals who create drama with everything, and it's always about them, and you know, they'll call up my employees and talk for 3 hours about all of their problems, which isn't appropriate because I don't pay my employees to listen for 3 hours. You know, they got other work to do. We have a lot of that education amongst the staff about what, you know, how you deal with someone who's incredibly victim-oriented and then won't do a thing you tell them to do, even the easy stuff, which is, a sign that they probably don't need to be a patient in my office, because we're looking for results. We're looking for, you know, getting people their lives back. And if we had nothing but these kind of patients, we wouldn't be able to help anybody. So it comes back to the principle that energy determines relationship, and I'm going to expand it out from not just the plastic surgery office now, but in anything. If you're not getting along with somebody, and you anything you try and you can't get along with them, and it just isn't happening, you know, it probably has to do with differences in where you're vibrating and energetically. And, most relationships, if you're similar energy, are very easy, without conflict, without misunderstanding. And if you surround yourself with difficult relationships, then it's going to be very frustrating for you in general. And you can't choose your children. You can't always choose your parents. But every other relationship in life, you have choice.
Yeah, and I think you have choice in a lot of ways around those relationships. But, you know, just that one point that you said, I think it's fascinating, you know, if you take these principles of understanding human nature to being a plastic surgeon, and then you have people, and I know some of them are probably for other reasons, but you have people who are choosing to change themselves on the outside when the fixes they really need are the inside, or when they change themselves on the outside, but they're unable to embrace themselves in a more beautiful or caring way on the inside. What an amazing experience that would be to be a plastic surgeon and try to balance out the desire that people come to see you have for changing their appearance, when all you probably really want to say is, gosh, you're just amazing. Like, you're beautiful on the inside. Can you see that? And they can't. I bet a lot of them when they actually come to see you.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I've interviewed most of the leaders in consciousness, spirituality, and holistic medicine, including Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, you know, Andrew Weil, and I think those three individuals told me during the interview that they were very, very greatly influenced by a plastic surgeon. I don't know if you're old enough to know who this is, but one of the very first books ever written for the personal, embetterment or the self-help movement was Psycho-Cybernetics.
Yeah,
and that
was
written by a plastic surgeon.
Yeah, great book. Great book.
It really is. And I read it when I was a teenager.
Wow.
And I just said, oh my goodness, you know, this is so true. And in the book, I think it's Maxwell Malt, right? Isn't that the name of the
author? That sounds right.
Yeah, Maxwell was a plastic surgeon who noticed that he would do rhinoplasties, which really does change your appearance. I mean, changing your nose is really one of the biggest things that changes you. You know, when you look in the mirror, you see a different person. A facelift, you see the person you were, you know, 20 years ago. But when you change your nose, it really does change who you're looking at. And therefore, the nose is the ego. I mean, that's what it represents. So he changed the nose in some people, and they would just change. You know, they would become different people, and they loved the nose, and they would, you know, they just loved everything. Then in a few people, he would change their nose. They get the same result, because you really do change the way people look. And they would look in the mirror and see the same person. They wouldn't. They would accuse him of not doing anything. And I've had that happen with me, too. I've had patients accuse me of actually not doing the surgery that I did, even though there's a tremendous change. I mean, it's like, are these people insane, you know? what's going on? So,
how rewarding that would be, though, in order to, you know, for those people who, let's say on one side, you have people who really have done the work on the inside, mm-hmm. and they can change the outside up to a point, whether it's their relationship experiences, work, service, but they're desiring to change that physical appearance, and you can give them the last piece of the puzzle in order that they can desire that their outside experiences matches the inside. And I'm sure you have people from all walks of life who come there, but that would be an amazing opportunity, and what a great gift to give someone that is willing to do, and I'm sure they're not all that way, but who is willing to do some of the inner work to match what they really desire on the outside.
Let me tell you a story about a woman who came to see me from Arizona. I found this fascinating. She came for a facelift, and during her history, I was taking her past medical history, and she had rheumatoid arthritis, pretty bad. I mean, I could see it on her hands and everything. And she was getting this facelift as something nice to do for herself, a gift, because she had this disease. And so I said to her, I said, well, why wouldn't you just want to get rid of your rheumatoid arthritis? She said, can you? And I said, sure. So I put her in this holistic program that treats the intracellular mycoplasma, because in many cases, rheumatoid arthritis is just an infection. And we did this holistic program, and sure enough, within about 6 months, she didn't have rheumatoid arthritis anymore. So she's come back every year, but she's, you know, to get, you know, just see me once a year, because she lives in Arizona. And she's never gotten a facelift.
Well, in essence,
so
you gave
you
her
go.
One. It was just from the inside, right?
Well, I think she was guided to me for the treatment, you know.
Clearly.
I mean, really. Well, yeah, because, you know, her rheumatologist knew nothing about this.
Wow.
A lot of this intracellular stuff is suppressed like mad by the government because, of course, it's the basis for our biological warfare system. I was in the military for 13 years, so I know a fair amount about that. And anybody doing research on this is told not to do it. In fact, even taken to court and told not to do it. So, there's a huge amount of stuff going on to cover up the fact that intracellular spirochetes are involved in a lot of the neurodegenerative disorders, including MS, and intracellular mycoplasmas are involved in a lot of the autoimmune diseases.
That's fascinating.
It is, isn't it?
It actually is fascinating. And
it's
interesting how there's information out there and resources and tools and solutions. But again, it goes back to our ability to listen. Well, as human beings, and this woman probably was given many, many insights to actually come up with a solution for her, but perhaps either she wasn't quite listening or going to the wrong places, and then all of a sudden something guided her to you. Something guided her, and it was...
The guidance was, I want a facelift, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, what
was,
is the irony of that? She just had given up on one thing and attached herself to something else, and I think it's kind of the same thing, you know, with having kids. There's so many couples who have such a hard time, and then they finally let go, or they adopt, and then they get pregnant.
Then they get pregnant.
Right, or you can't find a job, and so you settle for something that, you know, is nothing like what you want to do, and then you get offered the job. It's just, when you're willing to let go, I think many times a door opens that allows you to step into exactly what you desire, but sometimes I think we're holding on so strong to what we want that it just can't happen.
Well, I think it, you know, even on the mundane level, like if I've lost something, I know that I know where it is, you know, but I can't remember where it is. So I just ask. I mean, I just ask, please tell me within the next 24 hours where this is. And then I let it go. And you're right, that being able to let it go is really something that we sometimes need to work on.
Yeah, Dr. Kolb, I think it sounds like this. Look, Spirit, I've got 10 minutes and I have to leave. You've got to tell me where my car keys are.
Right. That's true. Or you could buy one of those little things that chirps, you know.
That's right. Yeah, we all need
technology,
those little...
you can use that too.
Those little button things that tells you.
Yeah, I mean, if it happens all the time, you can actually, you might be guided to that. Which,
that's right.
You know, here, do this. But yeah, so there's a lot of help out there. Is the point, and the more someone is isolated, the more they feel that it's just them and there's nothing else to help them, and the world is hostile, and you know everybody is, you know, out for themselves, and they're out for themselves. Because, you know, they're out for themselves, so they see everybody else is out for themselves. The more isolation you get, the more depression, the more, you know, chronic illness, the more, I think, low back pain. Carolyn May says, you wear your wallet in your lower back. There's been plenty of times when I've actually had two techs who developed back pain out of the blue, young people without injury. And each time I looked up at them, I said, that's financial. And they go, how'd you know that? One time, one of my Tex boyfriends, you know, spent all of her money on a credit card, and she was having, you know, she'd go home. You know, she was a responsible person, so this was really painful to her, and she went home, and she'd have all these collection calls, and she didn't know how to handle this situation. So she developed low back pain, which is, you know, an interesting thing, that physical ailments can be totally due to emotional and mental problems.
Yeah, I think they almost always are. And they're not always due to them, but they are guidance factors that bring us either back to some area of our life. And it could be physical, it could be spiritual, it could be emotional or whatever. But I think that, you know, illness and pain, I mean, they're great teachers. They really have the ability to help us along our way. And we don't always embrace that, though. Sometimes we rebel against it, and we prevent ourselves from actually getting the greatest opportunity as we move through those situations. But there's a big difference between pain and suffering, and I think suffering is really where we go wrong. Suffering is where something happens in our life, whether it's illness or pain, and we allow our lives to be confronted by it in a way that it tears us down and doesn't lift us up. And suffering is something we have full choice over. We control suffering. We have no control over pain many of the times. And so pain is something that can be a guiding factor, where, you know, suffering is something I think that we do to either prevent ourselves from being honest with what's going on in our life, or even something that we do to prevent ourselves from stepping into our greatness.
That's true. In our society anyway, the idea of the martyr, the long sufferer, there's an archetype of that people are attracted to, and that can be a life choice that is probably a waste of energy. If you look at what you were supposed to do.
And those are the tough ones to hire as well, right? When you're a boss or an entrepreneur and you hire people who have a focus on drama or a focus on suffering, and we know who those people are, and we've all hired them, and yet you look at them and you say, gosh, wouldn't you be happier if you were able to let go of your attachment to what's wrong in the world, or your attachment to all the things that are happening outside of yourself? But again, it's not our place to guide them, yet drama is something, and focusing on other people's reality is just an excuse that we have for not living our own truth. But, you know, if we can't help people see it in and of themselves, we again have control over our environment, and we get to choose the people that we spend time with, the people that we connect with. And we have to be conscious of that, because we actually need to be conscious of our environment, of the people that we're going to spend time with, if we're going to maintain a positive space as we move forward in life.
We have a sign that I never put up, but I still have the sign. One of my friends made it for me. We're here to treat the patient, not the employee.
That's a great sign.
And then we recently had a no-drama policy at HR. HR did a no-drama policy. And before that, I put a policy in place that, you know, a no-threat policy. You know, don't threaten to quit. Because I'll take that as, you know, you're quitting, and I'll let you go, you know. So that policy is in place, too. But both of those policies help HR or the managers decrease the energy around the drama queen and the person who's always threatening, because that's really a part of the drama.
And I think it's something that we have to manage, right? We need to do it everywhere. Like you get to set standards at the office,
right?
But we need to do it in our own lives about the type of people that we're willing to spend time with. And we all know who those people are in our lives. They're energy suckers. We spend time with them, and we don't feel uplifted after them. We feel worse. And so I think that we need to, you know, be conscious of those experiences as they happen, and allow ourselves to make better choices around our relationships. It'll impact us in dramatic and spectacular ways.
It will, and the other thing too is like the energy of attraction. If you change it within yourself, then what you see is dramatic changes outside, where the people say you just get rid of the being sucked in by drama in your own life. Then those friends who are basically drama, energized, will then quit calling you. You know, they just sort of disappear from your life. It's really kind of magical if you understand how everything works. That's why I love Michael Rice's books, because they really help me understand how reality's set up, with the filters and the, you know, how energy within you. Michael says you don't, not forgiving someone is like taking a poison pill and expecting it to hurt the person that, you know, you're angry at.
Hmm.
And that just isn't going to happen, you know. It's like,
you know, it's just so fascinating to me that in life we have so much control. We have so much say over what happens in our life. And yet we just refuse to do anything about it. It's so much easier to complain about it than it is to change it. And I think that's kind of the most dramatic aspect of living in life and not being willing to follow our truth or find our happiness, because we go out in the world, and again, we're looking outside of ourselves, we're blaming everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But if we were willing to take ownership, then we'd also have to take ownership of living our truth and following our path, and that's a pretty scary prospect for some people. And so it's all, you know, it's all combined. You know, as you say, as you actually go and you live your life of truth, things will shift, things will change, but you have to be willing to do the work, and you have to be willing to allow things to adapt and evolve in order to get to the place that you know yourself to be, get to the place where you know you'll find your happiness and fulfillment.
Yeah, and that, I think that's why a lot of spiritual traditions have you go away from everything, you know, in meditation, you know, on the ashrams, on the, you know, in the monasteries. I mean, all the great religious traditions had their disciples and their initiates kind of, you know, go away from the world to try to get themselves straight first. And then, of course, there's a second step where you go back into the world and see if you can maintain yourself straightened out. What if the world warps you back into what you were? So,
yeah, and I think that's kind of a key thing. I mean, I know that when I was younger, I always felt like, gosh, I just don't want to be on this, in this chaos of life. I'm just going to find a little cabin in the woods, and that's going to be my life. But
right.
I realized that part of life is being in life, is that we have to be in life, and that, you're right, it's one thing to find peace when you're sitting on top of a mountain at a Buddhist monastery, but it's another thing to find peace when you're in the middle of life and family chaos and work stuff, and if you can find peace there, then you've actually achieved a sense of well-being that you can take for the rest of your life. And so I've just always felt that you have to be willing to find these greatest parts of your life while you're in them, not when you're away from them. So it's not running away, it's actually running into life and being willing to see things from a new perspective and find the things that make life tick and being of service. But I just think it's, there's something about showing up and doing the work in your life that allows you to create and generate a sense of happiness that you can take with you forever. And by going away from it, while sometimes it's very, very enjoyable, it's not going to give you the tools in order to cope with the real world many times.
Yeah, Ram Dass used to describe it as little seeds that needed to pop inside of you. So whenever you were really annoyed at something, that was another little seed, and you should bless the person doing the popping, you know. Bless your petty tyrant, as Carlos Castaneda's material said. Because it's really, without these little conflicts and without these little problems, well, sometimes they're big problems too, you know, depending on how you react to them. But, you know, the things like false accusation, things like, you know, people misinterpreting, like we were saying before, misinterpreting your intentions on a constant basis, not on an occasional basis. Just all of the different scenarios we were talking here today are opportunities for you to just let it go, like you said. Just let it go, forgive it, just bypass it, and then you find yourself being able to be peaceful and happy in the midst of chaos. And then you know that you've got some enlightenment going on.
Right, then you know you're heading in the right direction. It's true.
Yeah.
You know, gratitude's a big part of my life, whether it's from, you know, going through cancer and just, you know, being grateful for every day or whatever it is. But, you know, gratitude, I think, is a key part of everybody's life when you're trying to find happiness. And it's funny, I was writing a blog post for my website this week, and, you know, we're coming to the end of the year. There's a lot to be grateful for. We're starting to think about our New Year's resolutions and, of course, how to get through family drama through Christmas or whatever it is. And so I was writing this post, and I just picked a couple people who have just done remarkable things for me and the Manual for Living work this year, and I just wanted to express my gratitude in a very public way. So I was writing this, and there were a couple people that we hired, separate from the two that I was acknowledging, who we paid a lot of money to, who just failed miserably, just catastrophically. We hired them, and they just did one of the worst performance jobs I've ever seen in my life, and I had to acknowledge them too. because, you know, I didn't call them out a name, but mm-hmm. because it's those people as well who help us grow and help us see and help us evolve, even though, you know, from a very mental and rational sense, they just look like the worst decisions you've ever made in your life,
right.
But yet they're part of the greater whole. They're part of what makes life amazing, and so you have to acknowledge those people just as you acknowledge the ones who contribute to you.
Right. Would you like to give your contact information?
Oh, of course. Again, the book series is called Manual for Living. My name is Seth Chernoff. My website is sethchernoff.com, and there's a lot of good information on there you can find. There's a lot of free information. There's a blog. There's a lot of good resources on there, and you can email me if you want. It's just seth@sethchernoff.com, and I'm a very approachable author. A lot of people have relationships with me or call me, and I'm really open to that. I don't charge for that. It's just part of what I believe is living a life of service, and you can also find me on Facebook and everywhere else, I think.
Great. Well, we're coming up to the end of our hour, Seth. I want to thank you very much for joining us today. We've been interviewing Seth Chernoff, whose triad book, Manual for Living, includes three books. The one I was reading was on connection, and then he has a book, Purpose, which will be coming out. Do you know when that will be coming out?
Boy, I don't know. Life
just
has
whenever you get done with it, huh?
Life has a way of getting in the way of the best of intentions in a very ironic way. But yeah, maybe at the end of next year or the beginning of 2013.
And then book one is on reality, kind of setting the stage for what we were talking about, what things really are like here rather than what we may think they're like. And he's working on workbooks for these as well. And you can reach him at his website or on Facebook or the other areas that he has indicated in the lecture. Well, thank you very much, Seth. I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Cole. It's been a true pleasure.
Great. Next week, we have Dr. Bradley Nelson, The Emotional Code, How to Release Your Trapped Emotions for Abundant Health, Love, and Happiness. On the 17th, Lamont Wood, Out of Place in Space and Time. And on the 24th, David Gahn on Double Helix Water. And Norm Shealy will be back talking with his new book, Energy Medicine, Practical Applications and Scientific Proof, on the 31st. We do not have Noetic Science this month. Noetic Science is usually the third Thursday of every month, but we found that in December people are too busy. Anyway, thanks a lot, Seth, and good luck to everybody, and join us next week.